From Anxiety to Love, a radical new approach for letting go of fear and finding lasting peace. Corinne has coached, counseled, and educated thousands of individuals at national conferences, in the classroom, in workshops, and in the therapy chair. She teaches weekly meditation classes and co-hosts the largest virtual conference of A Course in Miracles in the world through the organization Miracle Share International, which she co-founded. You can find her at FromAnxietyToLove.com. Welcome to the show, Corinne.
Thank you so much, Marie, for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So I have to confess, this was sitting on my nightstand beside my bed for a while, and I woke up. I knew the interview was coming, so I knew I was going to read it anyway, but I woke up at 4 a.m. the other night with really bad anxiety, couldn't get back to sleep, and I looked over and just happened to see the book, and I was like, maybe now is a good time to start reading the book. And you actually have had your own challenges with anxiety, so maybe you can share with us how you decided to write this book and a little bit about your story.
I sure have, and I so relate to that feeling that you described of just waking up in the middle of the night or even early morning and just having a high degree of anxiety. Sometimes it's not even attached to anything specific. That was my life for most of my life, for probably, I'd say, about 3 decades. And my story is that really I feel like I was born anxious. I was very prone to anxiety from birth. A couple of early childhood experiences happened that sort of amplified that. And I had an anxiety disorder diagnosis when I was 2. It sort of blew up when I was in college, when I started having uncontrollable panic attacks. And I'd be so afraid that they'd keep happening. So I developed panic disorder and generalized anxiety disorder. And it's so funny because as I've talked about this publicly now, I can't tell you how many people I know from high school, from college, have come out and said, Corinne, you know, me too. And they were just really good at hiding it like I was. I have a very convincing smile. It can look, you know, on the outside like everything's fine, but I was really good at hiding the pain that I was feeling inside. And so when I was in college, this is back in the 90s, and broke down with the panic attacks that one night, 3 a.m. in the morning was when I got like a punch in the stomach of stress hormones. And I remember climbing down my bunk bed, shaking at my knees because my whole body was just trembling, trying not to wake up my roommate who was asleep below me. And I grabbed our phone. We didn't have cell phones then. I grabbed our room phone and pulled it into the bathroom. And 3 o'clock in the morning, magically, my mom heard the phone ring and answered it. And she talked me through it. We figured it was probably a panic attack. And she introduced me to a spiritual pathway called A Course in Miracles, which is a book. And I can say a little bit more about that later. But up until this point, I was pretty closed off to exploring anything that was deeply spiritual. She tried to talk to me about it, and I'd say, like, I'm not interested, leave me alone, you know, don't talk to me about this stuff, talk to me in English. And it wasn't until I was really, really desperate that I was willing to try anything. And so over the years, my anxiety issues just didn't disappear overnight, but they did start to get better. And after, I call it my adult age episode of like a really bad anxiety episode, this was in 2009 when I was in a job that I didn't want to be in anymore. I felt stuck. 2 weeks before I was set to go back to work, because I had the summer off from my job, my psyche exploded. I literally just totally broke down. It was anxiety that was so bad, it felt worse than the first round of panic attacks when I first started when I was in college. And it was at that point in time when I realized that I could go much more deep into my spiritual practice. And that's when the anxiety really started to fall away and I really started to make some significant shifts. And I knew I had to write what was helping me. So that was 2010 when I started writing From Anxiety to Love. I started just writing about all the different principles of A Course in Miracles that were helpful to me. And I took 6 years to write this book. So it's been a long journey. And from, I guess, summer 2016 until now has just been the publication process. But I had to write it. It felt like a divine assignment. It really felt like there were no mistakes, that I went through this and found a way out, and I had to put down what was helping me on paper. So the result is now From Anxiety to Love.
That's amazing, Corinne. And I really appreciate you sharing not only your story about anxiety, but the fact that it took you 6 years to write the book, because I know I'm just guessing, because I deal with anxiety, that I think that anxiety type personality tends to be that more perfectionistic personality. And the idea of taking 6 years to mm-hmm. write something sounds like, I'm just curious, how many times along the way did you see it as a failure for not being done yet?
Oh, I'd be like, I want this done now. Like, this has to come out now. And it's funny because I actually entered a book writing contest. This is probably about 4 years ago now, because at that time I was in one of those modes of like, this needs to, you know, come out now, versus just the allowing process of just allowing things to happen in their own time. I entered this book contest completely lost, you know, no acknowledgement, not even an honorable mention. And there were tons of prizes given out. The funny thing is that the grand prize of that contest was a book deal with New World Library, which is my current publisher. So there is just a synchronicity in that, you know, timing wasn't right then. And here, years later, having to just trust and stay in the flow and let go of that, you know, perfectionistic, it has to happen now, and the self-judgment about timing, look, you know, now it's in print with that exact publisher. So pretty funny, right?
That is amazing. Yeah, it's and I wonder if you felt any kind of vindication towards whoever judged that contest, like, well,
Well, of course, you know, every no and every rejection is always like, I won't say crushing, but deflating, you know, because it's you want to hear it, yes. So you want other people to feel as excited about it as you are. And so I definitely felt discouraged at that time. I don't think I wrote for a little bit. I think I took a break after that contest. But the desire, the need, again, it wasn't like I did this because I wanted to be an author. It more so came from this place of, I have to do this. And so coming back into that energy is what really just carried me the rest of the way.
Beautiful. Thank you. We're speaking with Corinne Zupko. She is the author of From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. You can find more information about the book at FromAnxietyToLove.com. There's even going to be some free downloads and meditations there. You're also coming out with a meditation CD or album. I guess people don't make CDs anymore now, but we'll talk a little bit about that coming up. But I wanted to ask you, you mentioned, so in the 90s in college, you had this panic attack. You finally decided, okay, I'm going to start on this spiritual path of A Course in Miracles. Then about a decade later, you had an even worse panic attack. So mm-hmm. where are you at on your anxiety journey today?
That's a wonderful question. I feel like the anxiety disorders are light years from me now. I no longer have the anxiety like I used to. What shows up from time to time is like a residue. That's the best way I can describe it. It's a residue of old patterns. For instance, my biggest anxiety hook would be health fears. I would be so scared if I felt some sort of physical symptom that wasn't explainable, and my head would immediately go to the worst case scenario. And so what shows up from time to time is kind of like a whisper of that, where maybe I'll notice something that feels off, but the thought comes in and it's like almost laughable. It's almost just dismissible, like, you know, no. And I feel though, you know, at this point where I feel so in tune with myself that if I needed to go get some medical attention, I would know that that's what I need to do. There's a difference for me now between the anxiety response and, like, you know, the need to go take care of something. So it has made a significant difference in my life where I no longer have panic attacks. And it's not to say that they couldn't come back. Maybe something could trigger that, but I don't fear it because I know now that I have tools that work, and that every time in the past that I went into a period of like really bad anxiety, I came out with a much deeper spiritual practice, a much deeper understanding, and an even deeper commitment to remembering love and remembering the love and truth and light that connects us all. So no more anxiety. And if it came back, I don't fear it because I know that I have tools that work.
Beautifully said. And we're not giving out any medical advice on this show, but you did mention in the book that at some points you did take medication. And just because we're looking from a spiritual perspective, it doesn't, I mean, some people need medication, other people do not. And there's really, that's something to discuss with your doctor.
For sure. You know, I really take a middle of the road approach for myself because there were times when I was so debilitated, I needed a pill. Like I needed something that could help me relax enough so I could eat. Like I really wasn't functional. And so my approach that I talk about in the book is take medicine if you need it, but take it with, while giving it to your inner guidance system. In other words, the phrase that I use in the book, I call the loving part of your mind, because we have really two parts of our mind. There's this thought system of love and there's a thought system of fear. And the thought system of love, I call your inner therapist. It's the part of our mind that remembers that we're not actually bodies, that we are spirit and that we are love and light. And as we turn to that part of our mind, we can experience big shifts in perception. So I always like to say, take medicine if you need it, but take it with your inner therapist. Say, hey, you know, inner teacher, inner guide, whatever you want to call it. I believe in this pill right now. I believe I need it. So I'm taking it with you. And I'm going to trust that if the need for it falls away, it'll fall away at some point. But I'm not going to worry about it right now.
Hey, have you heard of RAP? The Wellness Recovery Action Plan? If you're one of the millions of Canadians who experience depression, anxiety, or some other form of mental illness, you should know that there's a free course that can help. RAP is an evidence-based program that works. It's developed and facilitated by peers who have experienced their own mental health challenges and have used RAP to recover and maintain long-term stability. RAP is based on the five key concepts of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy, and support. When you develop your own wellness recovery action plan, you'll identify the wellness tools that work best for you and keep you feeling well. You'll identify triggers and have an action plan for what to do when triggers inevitably come up in life. You'll make note of early warning signs that your energy or mental health may have taken a hit, and you'll identify clear steps to get back on track and prevent a crisis. Many people who use their RAP consistently go for years without a major crisis or hospitalization. But if a crisis does occur, you'll have a plan to minimize additional stressors that can make recovery even harder. And you'll have a clear path back to wellness. RAP is designed and managed by you in order to decrease and prevent intrusive or troubling feelings and behaviors, increase personal empowerment, improve quality of life, and assist you in achieving your own life goals and dreams. Free RAP workshops are offered across the Lower Mainland through Vancouver Coastal Health, Fraser Health Authority, and the Canadian Mental Health Association. The Canadian Mental Health Association is offering a free 3-day workshop specifically for family members. If you have a loved one who struggles with mental health challenges, this could help you maintain your wellness while you support your family member. The course runs from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. April 5th, 6th, and 7th. For more information or to register, call Monica at 604-341-6356. That number again is 604-341-6356. We are speaking with Corinne Zupko. She is the author of From Anxiety to Love, a radical new approach for letting go of fear and finding lasting peace. And I'm glad you brought up the inner therapist because I was just going to ask you that question. In A Course in Miracles, there's a lot of reference to God and the Holy Spirit. So maybe we can talk a little bit. Some people have an aversion to that.
Definitely. You know, these are loaded words because human beings have done atrocious things in the name of God. And, you know, I mean, we can think of dozens upon more than dozens of examples of this. And so it's turned a lot of people off. And it's turned a lot of people off when they think of God because they think of a dude with a white beard who sits upstairs and, you know, is orchestrating things down here. And so the Course, and in my book, I define I refer to God as pure love. Love that is wholly incapable of judgment, love that is wholly incapable of fear or punishment or anything like that, and how important it is, both from A Course in Miracles standpoint and from what I'm writing about in my book, that we look at and release these beliefs that tell us that, you know, God is a scary, scary thing. So I really like to think of those words as love, love with a capital L. And so I think that that sort of substitution can help a lot of people who have aversions to those words to kind of get the meaning behind the words, because that really is what we're going for. We get so caught up in semantics, you know, that my pathway is the right pathway, and it's these, you know, these words that I'm using, this is the right way. Whereas I really truly believe we all have to find a pathway that works for us, and there's not a one size fits all type of approach. So being open to substituting words and going to the meaning, you know, behind the words is really going to help us on the journey.
Thanks, Corinne. So in A Course in Miracles, it's referred to as God and the Holy Spirit. You use inner therapist, but it sounds like you're also saying we can use whatever term works for us. Inner spirit,
Definitely.
Inner guide, inner
Absolutely.
Knowing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that is really important to make it personal and meaningful to you, that if you don't like one terminology, you know, one type of terminology or one word, substitute another.
So you mentioned that in the 90s when you were in college, you started on this A Course in Miracles path, and then the anxiety came up even stronger. So what was the difference? You mentioned that you went deeper. So where were you at when you first started in college, and then what shifted for you?
Great question. So there was a big difference here that I didn't see for many, many years. And in college, when I started studying the course, I definitely got comfort from it. And some of the anxiety definitely got better. But fear is like a leaky pipe. So if you think about an old rusty pipe, it springs a leak in one place, you plug that hole, and what does it do in the weakest part, you know, elsewhere in the pipe, it just springs another leak. And fear is like that. Fear, if we're not getting to the root, it's going to keep springing leaks in different places. So for instance, when I first started studying the course, my overall anxiety level slowly started to diminish. Let's say I was no longer afraid of getting needles, but now I couldn't get on planes or I couldn't travel to an unfamiliar location. The fear sort of would shift and, you know, change forms. And so at that point, what I was doing was that I'd go to the course, I'd read something, it would make me feel better, it would make me feel a little bit more peaceful. Then I'd put the book down and go back to doing whatever I was doing. There was no, although the shift within me started, there wasn't a fundamental shift in my identity. So this is where we're going to get nice and deep. The course and my book is really about a shift in identity from our small s self to our capital S self. The small s self is really what we all identify with here in this world. You know, I believe I'm Corinne. The capital S self is an identity, an awareness of who we are in truth, which is not a body, which is pure eternal love. So when I was initially using the course, I wasn't necessarily like transferring, I wasn't in this process of transferring my identity from the small s self to the capital S self, and I was using the course as a band-aid. I'd just feel better, and then I'd go back to what I was doing. In 2009, I realized this, because it was like, you know, it surprised me. Like, how can I be having anxiety this bad when I have all this, you know, these spiritual tools under my belt? And I realized that what I needed to do at that point was to start looking at the anxiety and what was coming up. I needed to start looking at it with my inner therapist. I had to start turning toward it to be willing to see it differently and to examine kind of where it was coming from. So at this point, in doing that, in turning to that anxiety and saying, hey, you know, inner therapist, I don't know why I'm feeling this way. I don't like it, but I'm willing to look at it with you. What would happen is that I would experience some kind of shift that would start to build my trust that in fact I am, we all are, that capital S self, and that the small self of Corinne, quote unquote, is not really who I am. And so, as I like to say in the book, anxiety falls away as we begin to remember our true self, as we begin this process of really shifting our identity from our small self to our capital S self. That's where anxiety just can't exist. It has to fall away. And this isn't, I do want to mention that this is not an intellectual feat. You know, we can, there's a teaching in A Course in Miracles of I am not a body. And I had a friend once who was going for surgery, I think on her foot. And she was like, Corinne, I keep saying I'm not a body, but you know, it's not working. Like, I'm still in pain and I still have to go to surgery and it still hurts. And it's not an intellectual feat, but this is an experience that we start to have over time as we look at our fears with our inner teacher, with our inner therapist, and have experiences that build our trust in that capital S self. So the teaching of I am not a body starts to naturally become alive versus it just being like, you know, thinking happy thoughts type of thing. So I know I kind of threw a lot out there. Does that all make sense?
It does. Well, I mean, I've read the book cover to cover, so I have a hopefully listeners are understanding that. But I can imagine that there might be a listener who picks up your book and sees your picture and says, well, you know, Corinne is a young Caucasian woman living in America with a pretty, mm-hmm. pretty okay life. So let's say war were to break out or there was some kind of devastating diagnosis. I mean, you're not just going to magically be like, well, I'm love and light, right? What, mm-hmm. what might be the process that you would have to go through to be able to get over that initial shock of my life's falling apart?
I love this question. So the first thing that we need to do when things, you know, are really kicking up, when things are getting really painful and intense, is to feel our feelings. You know, this is not a course in bypassing or in pretending. It is about feeling our feelings, feeling the pain, feeling the grief, feeling the anger, feeling the sadness, but not stopping there. So we feel it. And again, it's this process of saying, I am feeling this way. This is happening. Help me see this differently. Because the small s self, or the ego thought system, as the course calls it. So ego is this idea of a small s self. That thought system is in place to keep us utterly convinced that we are separate selves, that we are bodies. And so if we can be willing, no matter what is happening, whether it's a war or an illness or a conflict or, you know, lack and scarcity, whatever it is, we have the opportunity to repurpose it, to say, this is a really convincing witness that this is all, you know, that we're all screwed. We're all doomed. And I want to see it differently. I don't want to see it that way. I want to see the love that's there instead. You know, I want to see the truth. I want to learn about the capital S self. And in just that willingness to see our pain differently, we make space for an experience of a renewed sense of trust and an experience that our identity far, far exceeds our small s self, our bodies. Hmm. I hope that makes sense.
It does. And Corinne, so it sounds like now the person who's going through this challenge, I mean, the ultimate fear is we're going to be alone and we're going to die. That's the fear, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So we're all going to die at some point. So if something breaks out, a war or an illness or whatever, it doesn't mean that the person practicing and talking with the inner therapist isn't going to die.
Mm-hmm. So great question. The course, and you know, I don't get into this part of it so much in my book, but these are the deeper teachings of the course, that there's actually a different way to shed the body. There's a different way. The course says it's not old, nor sick, nor hurt. Its usefulness, it's merely laid down, like it's because its usefulness is over. I don't. That's a paraphrase. I don't have the exact quote.
It's like getting a new iPhone. You have to upgrade.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that. So that's an important thing. Is that there's actually, this is learning this thought system of love actually asks us to question every single belief we hold in our mind, even our belief in death. So death is like the one sort of core dream of this world that holds it all together. You know, that's the one guarantee in life we can say is that everybody's going to die. And yet the Course is saying that we should even question that, because that is also a dream that we can wake up from, where it's not that the body lives forever, but that you're not a body. And so you do live forever. And so that's, again, an experiential knowing that we can wake up to. And what I turn to in help with understanding this are turning to any of the near-death experience stories that you hear about. There's some powerful ones, and there's some great books like Eben Alexander's Proof of Heaven, Anita Morjani's Dying to Be Me. There's just wonderful, wonderful books that talk about this experience of a person, you know, being out of their body and having this experience that is really, you know, they come back with an awareness and with, you know, experiences that are unexplainable here. And of course, from a skeptic's standpoint, oh, that's just your brain misfiring. But the more I read about this, just the more I become convinced that there really is something else, and that, you know, death isn't what it seems. One of the best examples, I have a really great example. If you remember Siskel and Ebert, the yep. acclaimed movie critics, Roger Ebert, when he was dying, I believe he was in and out of a coma, if I'm remembering correctly. When he woke up at one point, I think it was just a couple days before he died, he wrote his wife a note. And the note said, "This is all an elaborate hoax." And his wife at first was like, you know, I thought he was like being given too much medication and that he was hallucinating. But she realized that he was actually talking about this world. He was beginning a transition into, you know, an awareness that goes beyond this world, and that what we are experiencing here is not at all the whole picture by any means. That, you know, there are really parts of this, or I'd say all of this world, that are like a grand illusion, a grand sort of like experience of a shared sort of hallucination that is not our truth, and that we can wake up to that fact anytime, really. And you know, as we embark on whatever our spiritual pathway may be. So I love that story about Roger Ebert and, you know, him saying that this is all an elaborate hoax, and how beautiful if we can begin to question everything, even the scariest thing. Because I'm so glad you brought up this piece about death, because that was the core of my anxiety. I was terrified about dying. I was so afraid of getting sick or losing somebody that I loved. And it was through the Course and these practices and everything that I've written about in my book, because I do talk about how, you know, we're not bodies and that sort of thing in the book. It's been through that, again, my experiential understanding has increased enough that I don't walk around with terror in my heart that, like, I'm going to die or that somebody else is going to die. And to give you a perfect practical example of that, I'm now getting on airplanes and flying to places with no medicine, without my husband, with no fear, even during turbulence, which is it's almost unbelievable to me. I kind of will like take selfies on the plane when it's bumping, you know, bumpy, and I'm like smiling in the selfie because I don't feel fear, because I know that wherever I go, I truly, truly believe that I am safe. And so, and we all are, that there is, even if I seem to be up in a plane, there's actually no such thing as up or down. It's just all part of the same dream. So I know this can sound all kind of out there, but it has helped me so much.
Thank you.
So much. Yeah. We could
run. Don't miss Beth Ditto, frontwoman of indie rock band Gossip, on March 28th at the Imperial. Ditto will be performing tracks from her debut solo album, Fake Sugar, with special guest Shun. Tickets are available now at livenation.com.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
We're speaking with Corinne Zupko. She is the author of From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. You can go to her website, fromanxietytolove.com, for more information and some downloads as well. I wanted to ask you, because as I was reading your book, you gave a great example of something that your husband did that you associated with triggering a headache or a migraine. Mm-hmm. And I'm going through, so I've been in this relationship for 3 years now, best relationship of my life, beautiful, beautiful person. He's broke. And mm-hmm. I am terrified. I grew up in poverty. I'm terrified that if I sign on for a commitment with this person, life is going to be a constant struggle. And mm-hmm. so I start to pick apart everything that he does. And I've been in this place for this whole time, kind of, should I stay or should I go? And it's exhausting. And I'm just wondering if from your perspective and from a Course in Miracles perspective, what would you advise someone in a similar situation to do?
Wow, what a great example. And thank you so much for being so forthcoming, because I know that people listening, I know that there's listeners who can just wholly identify with that. I'll quickly share the example that you referenced in the book about the candle, and then go into, you know, answering your question. And the experience in the book about the candle was that I recognized, so my husband lit a citronella candle. I was downwind of it and started getting a headache from it, because I tend to be, you know, sensitive to smells and that sort of thing. So I immediately wanted to go into blame, like, why did he light that stupid candle? The candle is causing my headache. And I realized in that moment that, again, this is an ego trick, in that this fearful thought system in our minds will always present reasons that we should say, like, oh, that is causing something, you know, that's affecting me in some way, that's causing me to X, Y, or Z, you know, that candle is causing the headache. What I realized from the work that I do, from the spiritual work that I do, is that that was an ego trick, and that it wasn't actually the candle, but that it was, number one, my belief that there is something out there that can affect me, because I think that I'm separate from God, and that it was really this sleeping part of my mind that was calling forth this experience to keep me identified as Corinne. So when I recognized that, I went into the living room, sat down, meditated. Now, let me just preface this by saying that when I get a headache like that, they last for like a day. It doesn't just go away once it's triggered. So I went into the living room, sat down, and meditated, and I had an experience of feeling like I was not alone in my living room. I had such a willingness to see this whole situation differently that I really felt a divine presence. And that headache lifted within minutes, which was not usual. That's not how it usually goes at all. So I say that to skeptics who are like, well, you just got away from the candle, and so of course your headache got better. But that's not, you know, once it's triggered, it doesn't just go away. But this headache evaporated very, very quickly. So that was the story in the book. The story, what you just shared about the relationship and, you know, the fears of scarcity, other folks are great mirrors for our own fears. And so if we, rather than, you know, seeing this as this other person's problem or pattern, if we can sort of be willing to own that they're just mirroring, you know, our fears back to us, we can then get really clear that, okay, you know, this fear is somehow coming from me. I know I have a lot of fear surrounding this. I know that, you know, this is a big trigger for me. And I am willing to look at this with my inner teacher. I'm willing to see this under the light of love, and to ask, to literally ask your inner therapist, your inner teacher, for an experience that will help you learn that abundance is meant for you, you know, that there is no lack. And when I say that, I'm speaking from some experience here, because I had some very close family members lose it all, you know, declaring bankruptcy, losing everything, no money. And the divine experiences where there were things that were just provided for them out of the blue by people who had no idea what they were going through, finding money in, you know, a random, I don't know, can like on the side of the road, you know, just things like that, taught me that even when you lose everything, that we can still learn that we are divinely taken care of. So of course, you know, it wasn't necessarily the easiest of experiences for them to go to, but by being willing to see that that other person is just mirroring your fears is a wonderful, wonderful place to start. And from there also too, I don't know if, you know, your partner would be somebody who'd be into this type of work, but of course, when we are in a relationship where the other person is willing to look at this as well, there are lots of teachings out there. I don't have any specific book recommendations. I feel like Marianne Williamson may have written something about money and abundance, but actually I know Lisa Natoli of the Teachers of God Foundation has actually a class in true abundance, and it's about, you know, giving and receiving being one, and really, really gets into exhuming these unconscious beliefs that we have about scarcity to get them out and to heal them, because we all, you know, deserve to learn that we are divinely supported, that we are cared for.
Thank you, Corinne. Well, when you said, now I want to talk about willingness, because I feel like it's so important. But when you mentioned the willingness to like learn that abundance isn't just coming from how much money is in my bank account, the fear that came up in my body was, yeah, but if I do that, then I know what's going to happen is the universe is going to take away what little I do have to show me mm-hmm. I can survive. And I don't want to go through that.
I love that you said that, though, because that's, you just uncovered an unconscious fear. So this is another part in my book that as we do this work, we're going to exhume and unearth more and more fears that we didn't even realize were there. Like, well, the universe is just going to take everything away because, you know, then I'm going to have to learn this lesson. And that's not that. That is beautiful. And I'm so grateful that you said that, because that reflects our collective belief that the universe, quote unquote, teaches us lessons and does things like, quote unquote, taking away the good in your life to make room for the better. None of those things proclaim a loving universe. They don't proclaim a loving God. So these actually are beliefs that limit us, because we've actually projected fear onto love. We've actually projected love onto God. And we have to see that and say, oh, there it is. There's the belief that I think the universe is going to do something bad to me, you know, to teach me a lesson. That's just my belief. That's not reality, because God love is incapable of causing pain. It's holy, holy loving, and that's it. And so the more we can release, you know, acknowledge and exhume those unconscious beliefs that we're carrying, the clearer and clearer and clearer we're going to get in getting back to love and living from that place of true divine light and joy. So what you brought up is awesome and critical that we all be, you know, willing to uncover those unconscious beliefs.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they're there, and they feel so real. And I know I'm not the only one. So
no, not at all. Not at all. And that's where, you know, in the book I talk about the fact that we do have an unconscious fear of God, of love, because of the, you know, popular phrases that we'll use that actually mask the fact that we are afraid of love. So for instance, I mentioned these already, but, you know, God, have you ever heard people say God takes the good away in your life to make room for the better? God gives you only what you can handle. Try saying that to somebody who's just lost a child or had gone through something horrific, or everything happens for a reason.
Oh, like, God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, yeah. Like these are all statements that reflect the fact that we have attached a lot of fear to God, and we need to heal that. We need to let that go, because God is only love and is incapable of causing any pain.
But pain happens. So how do you...
But pain happens. It sure does. So I conceptualize that as the script of the ego. So, you know, I get into this in the beginning part of my book with some of the metaphysics of the course, that this fearful thought system, the ego, is there to keep us convinced that we are these bodies and that this world is our reality. And so any pain that comes up is part of this, you know, ego script, this sort of plan of, you know, keeping our attention away from love. But with the pain that does come up, number one, again, we have to feel it. We can't spiritually bypass it, but we repurpose it. Rather than that pain staying as it is and seeing it however we initially see it, which would probably be through the eyes of the ego as something that's like, you know, awful and terrible, we can repurpose every experience that we go through to allow it to be used by our inner therapist instead, for it to help us wake up, for it to help us have an experience of the truth, to help, you know, that experience of love instead of fear.
I feel like I'm going to have to listen back to this interview because there's lots of little nuggets of goodness. Yeah. And I'll post clips on YouTube, youtube.com/spiritualshow.
CITR and Discorder are hiring a new station manager. Just asking for a friend, but if I know someone who would be great for this position, how would they apply? Well, you can email Eleanor at volunteer@CITR.ca or Hala at president@CITR.ca if you have any questions, and the full job description is on the CITR and Discorder website. If your friend thinks they can handle all this, then they should send a resume and cover letter to Hala Bertrand at president@CITR.ca by Friday, March 3rd. We apologize for the interruption. The deadline to apply for CITR and Discorder's station manager has been extended to this Friday, March 9th. Please enjoy your regularly scheduled programming.
Are You Aware Radio, alternate Thursday 6 to 7 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM. Profiling music and musicians take the route of positive action over apathy.
We are speaking with Corinne Zupko. She is the author of From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. Now, we've kind of been talking a little bit about willingness already, but I'm wondering if there's anything else that you want to say about willingness, because you also mention in the book, if we're not willing, are we willing to be willing?
Yeah. That's a little trick question. So if you think about a conflict that you're currently having, let's say it's a conflict of, you know, with someone at work or with a partner or a spouse, and ask yourself, are you willing to see that situation differently? If you are honest, if you are radically honest, sometimes you might be like, heck no, you know, they're wrong. My way is right. And I don't want to see this differently. Willingness is important, because it creates a mental white space in our minds for a new perception to come to us. Willingness is the precursor for change. Willingness is the precursor for miracles. So if we're not willing, love, we're blocking love. You know, it's not going to get through simply because we're not allowing it. But we have to be honest when we're not willing. So there might be a situation where we're like, heck no, I don't want to see it differently. I'm right and they're wrong. And good for you for recognizing that. What you can do when you recognize that you're not willing is then ask yourself, am I willing to be willing? And there you might be like, well, I'm not willing, but yeah, I'm willing to be willing. And so there then you found your willingness. You can say, oh, you know, there's my willingness. Inner teacher, inner therapist, you said that's all I need is my tiny little bit of willingness. Here you go. You know, I don't want to keep carrying this burden around on my shoulders. Here you go. You can take it back another step. So if you're not willing to be willing, are you willing to be willing to be willing? So it's a little bit of a mind game, but it will help you find just that tiny, tiny mustard seed of willingness that you can then offer to your inner therapist and pave the way for miracles to come, which is what this work is all about.
Beautiful. We're coming up close to the end of the show. We've been speaking with Corinne Zupko. She's the author of From Anxiety to Love. You can find her at fromanxietytolove.com. I know you have a meditation album coming out. You're also doing a book tour right now if people are listening to the live episode of this in 2018. But I'm just wondering what you'd like to focus on next.
Great question. So I will mention that the meditation CD corresponds to the meditations in the book. It's available on iTunes and on Amazon. And it's set to beautiful music. It's all professionally, you know, mixed and mastered. And the meditations I love, and I love the music. I actually love them so much that I listen to them myself, which I normally don't do because sometimes listening to your own voice during a meditation is just weird. But I love, and I've gotten such nice feedback so far for folks who have listened to the meditation CD. So that is available. I do offer 3 of those meditations for free through fromanxietytolove.com/meditations. That's where you can get, you know, a trial for those 3 free meditations to see if you like them. But that's super exciting. And the book tour is spread out over the next few months. So I have new events that are popping up all the time. You can either check my website at fromanxietytolove.com or my Facebook page, which is Corinne Zupko. And I have a lot of events linked there too. So it's really fun to be able to share this work with anyone and everyone who wants to join in on the fun.
Beautiful. So I'm wondering if you, we've kind of talked about willingness already, and we've talked a little bit about the small self and the big self. What do you feel like, is there anything that we haven't covered that needs to be mentioned, or something recent that's kind of come up, an example that isn't maybe in the book yet?
Mm. Oh, what a great question. So we've covered a lot of the basic and very important content. I will say book wise that there are also a lot of really important journal prompts. I have found in my own experience that writing in a journal is so valuable because I use it as a tool. You know, I use it to get out all the things that are in my head, to get it out on paper so it's no longer swimming around in my head. And that helps me process my feelings and work through things and bounce back much more quickly. It helps me to be willing to choose that miracle faster. So I would recommend that if you don't already have a journal, to anybody who's listening, to grab one, especially if you're going to also pick up my book, because it can be really wonderful to do some of these writing exercises. In terms of stories or practical examples, there are so many that it's hard for me to even pick one. And I just feel like just some of the examples in the book are first and foremost in my awareness, one of which is an experience that I had with someone who was behaving in a way, actually it had to do with finances, and the finances that this person was, the situation that they were going through wasn't pretty. It was a really tough situation that they were going through, and I didn't feel like they were managing their finances in the best possible way. So when they called me again for like the 20th time to kind of complain and say, you know, how they were trying to dig themselves out and what they were trying to do, I found myself, instead of trying to correct them and instead of me going into my fear about their financial situation, I instead decided to focus only on my willingness and on love. And so as they were talking, I was hearing their words, but it ended up sounding more like neutral sounds and syllables. And I remember on my back porch on the phone with them, gazing up at the trees, being willing to just, again, have a shift to see them differently. And as I focused on my willingness to see the truth in them, because here's another concept we didn't touch upon yet. Only the capital S self in me can join with a capital S self in another person. Only the small s self in me, or ego, can join with the ego in another person. So wherever I'm coming from, if I'm coming from ego, I'm going to call out their ego. If I'm coming from spirit or my inner therapist, I'm much more likely to be able to join with them there. Or, you know, maybe I won't see a change in their behavior, but I at least, you know, I'm holding that higher state of mind. So I was willing on this phone call to see the truth in them, to see their higher self, to see their true self, to see their love. And as I did that, and as I just fixed my attention on that intention, out of the blue, they started talking about how they realized that they have an ego. They were like, oh my gosh, I never realized that I actually have an ego, that I actually, you know, get a thrill out of these different business transactions and business things that aren't working right now, but used to work. And it was such a powerful example for me to see how when I bring myself to that higher state of mind, that that can then sometimes show up in a relationship in a very changed way. So I didn't correct that person. I didn't do anything like I usually did. And I mean, believe me, I did many, many times, and that only led to conflict. This time was different in that I wasn't going to do that again, but I was just going to set that intention to join with the truth in them. And then they ended up having some big shifts and insights as a result of that. So that is the very interpersonal nature of this work, where working miracles isn't just about us having peace and us having, you know, an awareness of love. It's about literally waking up with our brothers and sisters, you know, having this experience where, because of a choice that we make in our mind, we might have, they might have a different experience in their lives. And we're not always going to see evidence of that, of course. But that's where, again, trust comes in, that we're doing the best work that we possibly can and trust that it's all for the highest good.
Beautiful, Corinne. And it sounds like you weren't doing that. You weren't focusing on your willingness and your big S self as a way to try and manipulate your friend into seeing the light. You were just holding that space of, right now I'm going to focus on my inner being and connect with my friend's inner being.
Exactly. The moment we try to manipulate, you better believe the ego is in. And instead, having no expectation except to accept healing in my own mind, to have my perception be healed, that's when things shifted. That's when they shifted. So I'm glad you brought up that distinction, because that's super, super important. As soon as that manipulation gets in there, ego's in charge again.
And it's bringing it back to what you mentioned earlier, how the things in our external life, the people in our external life, mirror what's going on. So there were probably things going on in your ego around finances.
Yeah,
and holding that
and
space healed it.
Wanting to control them, worrying about them, being afraid that they're not going to be okay, and how is that going to impact me? So for sure, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how's that going to make you look if your friends are falling apart? And
Or family member. Yeah. How's that going to make me look if a family member is falling apart? Definitely.
Yeah. So many layers of stuff to uncover.
But the good news is that, you know, we have to remember that it might seem like, oh my gosh, there's so much to do. You know, I'm such a mess. I have so much to heal. This is going to take forever. You know, that's the temptation. And that's just the ego voice again, because this all boils down to one core belief, that if this belief is healed, all the others disappear. And that's the belief that we're separate from love. You know, that's the main mistaken belief, that we're separate from God, and we are absolutely, absolutely not. So there's a quote in the course that says, it's not necessary to follow fear through all of its circuitous routes. We just have to, you know, be willing to learn who we really are, and the rest just falls away.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much, Corinne. We have been speaking with Corinne Zupko. She is the author of From Anxiety to Love, A Radical New Approach for Letting Go of Fear and Finding Lasting Peace. Go to the website fromanxietytolove.com, and fromanxietytolove.com/meditations is where you can find those free downloadable meditations. Thank you so much for taking the 6 years to write this book, for facing the things that you didn't want to face, so that we could learn how to face the things that we don't want to face as well. Thank you so much, Corinne, for being with us.
Thank you, Marie, and thank you for being willing to go deep in this conversation. It was really awesome.
Beautiful. And thank you for being with us. I hope that this has served you well. I want to send you so much love. Be well. Namaste. Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Hey, have you heard of RAP? The Wellness Recovery Action Plan? If you're one of the millions of Canadians who experience depression, anxiety, or some other form of mental illness, you should know that there's a free course that can help. RAP is an evidence-based program that works. It's developed and facilitated by peers who have experienced their own mental health challenges and have used RAP to recover and maintain long-term stability. RAP is based on the five key concepts of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy, and support. When you develop your own wellness recovery action plan, you'll identify the wellness tools that work best for you and keep you feeling well. You'll identify triggers and have an action plan for what to do when triggers inevitably come up in life. You'll make note of early warning signs that your energy or mental health may have taken a hit, and you'll identify clear steps to get back on track and prevent a crisis. Many people who use their RAP consistently go for years without a major crisis or hospitalization. But if a crisis does occur, you'll have a plan to minimize additional stressors that can make recovery even harder. And you'll have a clear path back to wellness. RAP is designed and managed by you in order to decrease and prevent intrusive or troubling feelings and behaviors, increase personal empowerment, improve quality of life, and assist you in achieving your own life goals and dreams. Free RAP workshops are offered across the Lower Mainland through Vancouver Coastal Health, Fraser Health Authority, and the Canadian Mental Health Association. The Canadian Mental Health Association is offering a free 3-day workshop specifically for family members. If you have a loved one who struggles with mental health challenges, this could help you maintain your wellness while you support your family member. The course runs from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. April 5th, 6th, and 7th. For more information or to register, call Monica at 604-341-6356. That number again is 604-341-6356.
You know what's better than reading a great magazine? Reading a great magazine that also helps you fight poverty. Megaphone Magazine is sold by homeless and low-income vendors on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. Vendors buy magazines for 75 cents and sell them for $2. It's flexible, low-barrier work for people who may not have access to traditional jobs. Download the Megaphone app to find vendors and buy the magazine, even when you don't have change.
I'm Ashkan.
And I'm Nathan.
And we're residents from Orchard Commons working on our student-run production of the musical Rent.
Rent follows the story of a group of young and hopeful artists and musicians in New York City who are under the shadow of HIV and AIDS.
The show explores issues such as race, queer identities, substance reliance, and poverty, while shining a light on friendship, compassion, and love.
The show opens the weekend of March 23rd. Tickets are $10, and more information can be found on our Facebook event page, Orchard Commons Presents Rent.
Also, look out for our booths around campus for ticket sales.
To give more voice to local women artists and musicians. Mixtapes is a Vancouver-based biannual mixtape featuring women-identified musicians and sound artists from the Pacific Northwest. The Spring 2018 edition will be coming out on May 10th, with all proceeds going to the Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter. Women-identified artists are invited to send their submissions to btchtapes@gmail.com.
The release fundraiser will be held on May 10th at the Redgate Review Stage, featuring artists selected for this edition of The Cassette.
Miss Beth Ditto, frontwoman of indie rock band Gossip, on March 28th at the Imperial. Ditto will be performing tracks from her debut solo album, Fake Sugar, with special guest Shun. Tickets are available now at LiveNation.com.